Welcome to the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Juan, and we're back with our course on the Genesis story. We're on to lecture number 5 today, Jacob and Esau.
So we're entering the world of sibling rivalry here. Juan, I know you're the youngest of 4. Does this seem like a fair portrait of a youngest in the family? Can you relate to Jacob at all?
Yes, it is a very good portrait. I don't know about the lengths that Jacob went to, but I'm definitely... If you ask my siblings, I think they would definitely say that I was the schemer of the brothers. Therefore, it required a lot of reconciliation in our in our older years.
Well, as the oldest of 4, I'm definitely Team Esau in this story.
You
can relate
sold,
to that. I've never sold a birthright. Okay. No, we definitely didn't have that. But I feel for Esau, and I think what Dr. Jackson does in a really beautiful way that I've appreciated, I know you do as well, is he gets to the heart of what do you do when you've been wronged by your family, right? And I think in the book of Genesis, how do you repair these breaches in our relationship between other men that you inevitably have? And often it happens to the people that are closest to you. I know that's happened in my family as well. So how do you sort that out? And how do you work through that? And how do you get to a point of forgiveness?
And that's what's beautiful about this course. And, you know, anybody taking this course has probably already noticed this. That break in the relationship between man and God that starts with Adam and Eve rebelling against God has consequences with the relationship with people and other people, especially siblings. And so all of it is extremely relatable. And we can see those relationships that we all have and we all struggle with. And we can see in the characters that are presented to us in these stories from Genesis how to be reconciled when we make those mistakes.
Absolutely. So we hope you enjoy this lecture on Jacob and Esau. If you're looking for something else to study from, we've told you about Dr. Jackson's courses on the Bible. We do have dozens of other free online courses available for you at hillsdale.edu/course. One of my favorites that's connected to this topic is Dr. Arnn's course on Aristotle's ethics. So how do you think about how you relate to other people? What are your duties to other people? How do you live the best life? What kind of virtues should you develop? Dr. Arnn gets into all of that in his course on Aristotle's ethics, and that is available at hillsdale.edu/course. And now for a story of one of the great sibling rivalries in human history, we pass it over to Dr. Jackson.
In this lecture, we'll be covering the story of Jacob and Esau. We need to begin with even the conception of Jacob and Esau to see where their rivalry begins. It begins even before their brothers going after one another's throats. It begins in the womb. Chapter 25, verse 21. And Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife, for she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children clashed together within her. And she said, "Then why me?" And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations in your womb, two people from your loins shall issue. People over people shall prevail, the elder, the younger's slave." And as Alter notes in that last line, "the elder, the younger's slave," the Hebrew syntax there is a little ambiguous. It could be "the elder shall serve the younger," or it could be "the elder, the younger shall serve." So even in the Hebrew syntax with that ambiguity, there's struggle there. We're trying to figure out who will in fact come out on top. And when her time was come to give birth, look, there were twins in her womb. And the first one came out ruddy like a hairy mantle all over. And they called his name Esau. Then his brother came out, his hand grasping at Esau's heel. And they called his name Jacob. Yaakov, he who deceives. And Isaac was 60 years old when they were born. And the lads grew up, and Esau was a man skilled in hunting, a man of the field. And Jacob was a simple man, a dweller in tents. And Isaac loved Esau for the game he brought him, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So you notice there, whatever rivalry these two brothers have, one, it begins in the womb. Two, we can see it start extending out to the parental favoritism as well. And Jacob prepared a stew, and Esau came from the field, and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me gulp down some of this red, red stuff, for I am famished." And Jacob said, "Sell now your birthright to me." And Esau said, "Look, I'm at the point of death. Why do I need a birthright?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me now." And he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate, and he drank, and he rose, and he went off. And Esau spurned the birthright. So let's stop here for a moment. This first, it's hard to call this deception. Because is Jacob really deceiving his brother Esau here? The text really kind of emphasizes Esau's worldly ways. He comes in from the field and he says, "I'm famished. Sell to me your birthright." So first we have to understand, what does that mean, your birthright? Well, Esau's the firstborn. To him goes the inheritance. And with that inheritance, there's great responsibility. He will have his father's possessions. So notice what Jacob has been thinking about all this time as they've been growing up. This comes out of the blue. Esau comes in from the field, famished, and Jacob immediately, "I want your birthright." He's been thinking about this. And Esau happily gives it up, willfully gives it up. Look, he even says, "I'm at the point of death." Is this a little hyperbole? I mean, is this really this man of the stomach here, willing to give up in the entirety of his birthright for a bowl of red, red stuff? So the idea of Jacob as deceiver, I don't know that it plays out here. We can certainly see that Jacob has been scheming. Jacob has been looking for an opportunity. But certainly there has to be some blame for Esau. In fact, in the rabbinic tradition, this is a great sin to give up all of his birthright here, and especially for a bowl of soup. And I love the I love how quick the syntax rolls off our lips on verse 34. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. Now listen to this. And he ate and he drank and he rose and he went off, and Esau spurned the birthright. Notice how immediate each one of those actions are. This is a man who's not thinking about his future. He's thinking about in the here and now. Chapter 27, and this is when we really start to see the rivalry and the way in which Jacob will become the deceiver come to light. And it happened when Isaac was old that his eyes grew too bleary to see, and he called to Esau, his elder son, and said to him, "My son." And Esau said, "Here I am," and there's that word again, "hineni." Esau, in front of his father, "hineni, I am here. My full being is here in your presence." And he said, "Look, I've grown old. I know not how soon I shall die. So now take up, pray, your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field, and hunt me some game, and make me a dish of the kind that I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that I may solemnly bless you before I die." And Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to Esau, his son. And Esau went off to the field to hunt game to bring. And Rebekah said to Jacob, her son, notice there, said to Jacob, her son. And we already saw the way in which Rebecca is very active in what it is that she does in that betrothal scene. We're going to see that activity come out here. "Look, I have heard your father speaking to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me some game and make me a dish that I may eat, and I shall bless you in the Lord's presence before I die.' So now, my son, listen to my voice." And we're going to see this theme come up again and again, this "listen to my voice." "To what I command you, go pray to the flock and fetch me from their two choice kids, that I may make them into a dish for your father of the kind he loves. And you shall bring it to your father, and he shall eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth-skinned man. What if my father feels me, and I seem a cheat to him, and bring myself a curse and not a blessing?" And his mother said, "Upon me your curse, my son. Just listen to my voice and go fetch them for me." And here it's the line from Jacob. He knows what he's doing is going to be deceptive. He doesn't know that the Lord came to his mother and gave her this prophecy. He simply is doing what his mother says. And look at what he worries about. What if he feels me and I seem a cheat? Not that I am a cheat, but that I seem a cheat to him. He knows there is something underhanded going on here in the way in which he's trying to get his father's blessing. Surely there has to be some other way to get a father's blessing. And he went and he fetched and he brought to his mother, and his mother made a dish of the kind his father loved. And Rebekah took the garments of Esau, her elder son, the finery that was with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the kids she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. And she placed the dish and the bread that she made and in the hand of Jacob, her son. And he came to his father and said, "Father." And Isaac said, "Here I am, Hineni." Oh, right here in the presence of Jacob. "Who are you, my son?" And now for a moment, just think about what Jacob is doing here. In the presence of his father, whose eyes are bleary and he can't see, he knows he's going to deceive. He's put on Esau's clothes. He stands here before his father, and now he's got skins of goats draped on his hands and his neck. Not only that, but he has his old father. He says, "Hineni, here I am. Who are you, my son?" He's saying, "Here I am, my son, before you in your presence." And Jacob says, "I am Esau, your firstborn." Even here, I like to argue that Jacob's trying to hold back with the full deception. Why? Because Esau has in fact given him his birthright. I don't think he wants to just say, "I am Esau," but he says, "I am Esau, your firstborn," since Esau has given him that birthright. Jacob, in some way, shape, or form, adds that last part, so he's not completely deceptive here. And Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you have spoken to me. Rise, pray, set up, and eat of my game, so that you may solemnly bless me." And Isaac said to his son, "How is it you found it this soon, my son?" He's already a little dubious about what's going on. And he said, "Because the Lord your God gave me good luck." And now we can see, well, can he mean that? I suppose he can. "Your Lord God gave me good luck." If he's pretending to be Esau, I didn't have to go way out into the field to get this game. Rather, the game is already there. I did not have to go very far out in order to do this. Perhaps this is what he means. Or perhaps he means, maybe quite literally, "Your Lord God gave me good luck with Rebekah, my mother, on my side, doing these things for me." And Isaac said to Jacob, "Come close, pray that I may feel you, my son, whether you were my son Esau or not." And in that statement, we realize he's dubious. He realized there's a possibility that he's being tricked here. That he realizes that voices can be changed, and now he needs to feel because his eyes are bleary. And Jacob came close to Isaac, his father, and he felt him, and he said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, and the hands are Esau's hands." But he did not recognize him, for his hands were like Esau's hands, hairy, and he blessed him. And he said, "Are you my son Esau?" So now he's cutting to the chase, no longer, because Jacob's already said, "I'm Esau, your firstborn." He cuts that off and says, "Are you Esau?" And Jacob said, "I am." Now we see the full deception, and now we see the blessing that's coming. And he said, "Serve me that I may eat of the game of my son, so that I may solemnly bless you." And he served him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And Isaac, his father, said to him, "Come close, pray, and kiss me, my son." Notice all the repetitions of "my son." I always just imagine this in some ways has to be a little heartbreaking for Jacob. And he came close, and he kissed him, and he smelled his garments, and he blessed him, and he said, "See, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed." And now let's look at the blessing that he gives to him, because it's pretty startling, I think. "May God grant you from the dew of the heavens and the fat of the earth an abundance of grain and drink. May people serve you, and nations bow before you. Be overlord to your brothers. May your mother's sons bow before you. Those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you, blessed." Now I want us to just think for a moment what Jacob is witnessing here. We know that the favoritism has been made explicit in the text Isaac loves Esau, desires to bless him. Rebekah loves Jacob. So now look at what this blessing is. Jacob, disguising himself as Esau, gets to see precisely what his father is willing to give Esau, his firstborn. He has to witness this. And what is it that he gives to him? Be overlord to your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow before you. This must be pretty startling for Jacob to think this is what his father has given. And really, in some way, shape, or form, as we'll see in a moment, doesn't withhold any blessing at all for Jacob. This is everything going to Esau. One must wonder what else is there that he can bless Jacob with? And it happened as soon as Isaac finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob barely had left the presence of Isaac, his father, that Esau's brother came back from the hunt, and he too made a dish and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father rise and eat of the game of his son, so that he may solemnly bless me." And his father Isaac said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." Notice there the syntax has been reversed. "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau," as opposed to Jacob said, "I am Esau, your firstborn." He's reminding him of these things. And Isaac was seized with a very great tremble, and he said, "Who is it then who caught game and brought it to me? And I ate everything before you came and blessed him. Now blessed he stays." When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out with a great and very bitter outcry, and he said to his father, "Bless me too, father." And he said, "Your brother has come in deceit and has taken your blessing." And Esau said, "It was his name called Jacob, that he should trip me now twice by the heels, first at the birth, the second at the birthright." Remember, the heel imagery here is he was struggling, trying to get to become the firstborn, pulling at his heels. Now he's saying, now he got me a second time in getting that birthright for me. Has he come one more time to trip me up? My birthright he took, and look, now he's taken my blessing. And he said, "Have you not kept back a blessing for me?" In some ways, Esau's hurt here, but at the same time, the reader, we understand that Isaac desired to heap all on Esau and leave nothing back for Jacob. And Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Look, I made him overlord to you and all his brothers. I gave him as slaves, and with grain and wine I endowed him. For you then, what can I do, my son? I can't give a blessing that's going to contradict this blessing. I've offered everything to him." And Esau said to his father, "Do you have but one blessing, father? Perhaps maybe you have a lesser blessing." This is what he's asking. "Anything, bless me too, father. Anything that you have. May I please have a blessing from my father?" Remember, and Esau knows that he is Isaac's beloved son. For a moment here, we have to sit back and we have to think, as unfair as we maybe deem this, a father favoring this son, nevertheless, there is a love and a bond between the two of them. And the son wants some sort of blessing from him. And Esau raised his voice and he wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Look, from the fat of the earth be your dwelling, and from the dew of the heavens above." And I want to stop and look to show you how this is a reversal of the very blessing that he gave to Jacob, who says, "From the dew of the heavens and the fat of the earth." So we see something here. There's going to be some sort of reversal going on in whatever this blessing is that he can give to Esau. We keep going in the blessing. "By your sword shall you live, and your brother shall you serve." In other words, he's saying, you too are going to be a servant of Jacob, but you will live by the sword. You will be a man who is of the military. And here comes the last two lines. "And when you rebel, you shall break off his yoke from your neck." Not if you rebel, but when you rebel. And we can specifically understand how he will rebel, this man of the sword. We see here some sort of prediction of violence, or so it seems, a prediction of violence. And here, "you shall break off his yoke from your neck." And I want us to just pay attention to the use of the word neck here, because it comes back later in the story in this really beautiful manner. "And Esau seethed with resentment against Jacob over the blessing his father had blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, 'As soon as the time for mourning my father comes around, I will kill Jacob, my brother.'" And here you have an understanding. Ah, here's the time of the sword. Here's the time in which he will break the yoke from his neck. The next time he sees his brother and it's time for that mourning, this will be the rebellion. This is when Esau's blessing will come to pass. And Rebekah was told the words of Esau, her elder son. And she sent and summoned Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, look, Esau, your brother, is consoling himself with the idea he will kill you. So now, my son, listen to my voice. Once again, listen to my voice. Notice how this whole narrative is just being dictated by listen to my voice. It's all that Isaac has is he's listening. Listen to the voice. Let me feel. Rebekah, listen to the voice. Rise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and you may stay with him a while until your brother's wrath subsides, until your brother's rage against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him, and I shall fetch you from there.
Hey, it's Scott Bertram, and I've got a challenge for you today. Become a better educated American citizen. And to help you do just that, we at Hillsdale College have our free online courses available for all who wish to learn. Our challenge? Take just one of our courses. There are so many to choose from. You can discover the beauty of the Bible and the Genesis story, study the writings of C.S. Lewis, or explore the true meaning of America in Constitution 101. We have dozens more to choose from, and all these self-paced free courses feature Hillsdale faculty and scholars, many you've heard on this podcast. So visit hillsdale.edu/course, C-O-U-R-S-E, and pick one of the more than 30 free Hillsdale courses. I hope you'll accept my challenge. Pick whichever course you like and become a more educated citizen today. Go to hillsdale.edu/course, C-O-U-R-S-E. That's hillsdale.edu/course.
And now in this story, which is such a rich, rich narrative, we're going to leave Jacob and his time with Laban, but it's really important for me to summarize what he undergoes there, because I think it's extremely important for us to see there is going to be a reconciliation between the brothers. They are going to come back, but this is going to be that they are 20 years separated. And Jacob spends his time with Laban, and it really is one of my favorite parts of this whole narrative. Rachel and Leah, what do we get there? It's a sibling rivalry, the younger against the elder. Jacob gets thrown into this rivalry. In fact, he is the very object of this rivalry. He loves Rachel the younger, and yet he's tricked by Laban in order to get him to marry Leah. In some ways, it's this delicious moment where you get to see, this is the household in which Rebekah was raised. Oh, I think we come to a slightly better understanding of Rebekah's character and her dealings with Isaac here. Because Jacob is tricked. He gives 20 years of service, 20 years of service to Laban because he loves Rachel. He's tricked, and there's this wonderful reversal at night when he thinks, after he's been given Rachel in marriage, he thinks he's going to bed with her in the dark, so he's blind, and instead he ends up consummating the relationship with the elder daughter. He is duped precisely in the way in which Isaac is duped, through this blindness itself. So he spends 20 years with these daughters, and this is where I want to pick up on the story here. And I'm going to pick up on the story when it's time for Esau to return, and it's time for these two brothers to come back one more time. This is Genesis chapter 32, verse 4. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the steppe of Edom. And he charged them, saying, thus shall you say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob. I just want to stop right there. In all of this language of Jacob, I want you to pay attention to the way in which he reverses the idea of servant and lord. He will keep calling himself servant, and he will keep calling Esau lord, because he knows what his own blessing was, and he's trying to undo this. He's trying to placate Esau in some way. With Laban I have sojourned, and I have tarried till now, and I have gotten oxen and donkeys and sheep and male and female slaves, and I send ahead to tell my lord to find favor in your eyes. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is actually coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Now this number 400 men, it's used in biblical literature. There may or may not be literally 400 men here, but the use of 400 men is always a militaristic number. So what this means when they say, and he comes with 400 men, what they're saying is, and he's coming with a lot of armed men. And of course, Jacob remembers precisely how he left his brother. He knows precisely this is the time when it's time for Esau to rebel. This is the time of the sword. And of course, Jacob, it says, is greatly afraid. He was distressed and he divided the people that were with him and the sheep and the cattle and the camels into two camps. And he said to himself, should Esau come to the one camp and strike at the remaining camp, will escape. And Jacob said, God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, Lord, who has said to me, return to your land and your birthplace and I will deal well with you. I am unworthy of all the kindness that you have steadfastly done for your servant. Sir, with my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Oh, save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and strike me, mother with sons. So he knows the time has come. The brother that he betrayed before, the one time got his birthright, the second time just tricked him and got his blessing. Now he's trying to reverse course. He offers him even more. Verse 19, he says to his servants, you shall say, they are your servant Jacob's. Notice he's calling himself Esau's servant again. A tribute sent to my lord Esau. And look, he is actually behind us. He's doing everything he can to placate his brother. For Jacob thought, let me placate him with the tribute that goes before me. And after I shall look on his face, perhaps he will show me a kindly face. I want us to pay attention to this notion of face here. It's going to become very, very important in the rest of the narrative. And even placate him, it means literally something like, let me cover over his face. Perhaps he'll show me a kindly face. I shall look on his face. And he rises that night, and his two wives, and they crossed over the Jabbok ford. And here comes one of the most mysterious passages in all of Genesis here. This is verse 24. And Jacob was left alone, and a man, Ish, wrestled with him until the break of dawn. And he saw that he had not won out against him, and he touched his hip socket. And Jacob's hip socket was wrenched as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for dawn is breaking. And Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. This is just typical Jacob. Holding on, he's tenacious. And look at what he wants here, wrestling with this mysterious figure, this Ish, this angel, this divine messenger. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And Ish said, not Jacob shall your name hence be, but Israel, for you have striven with God and men and won out. And this is really important, this name change. Remember, Jacob means one who deceives, someone who's willing to outwit, outmaneuver, to deceive. Now he says, that's no longer your name. In other words, this is how you've been living your life. You strive, you deceive, but now your name shall be Israel, which means prevailing, a lordliness, an openness. You've striven, there's a tenacity to you, but you have to channel it properly. You've striven with God and men and won out. So we get this renaming of him here. And Jacob asked and said, tell your name, pray. And he said, why should you ask my name? And there he blessed him. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, meaning, I have seen God face to face and I came out alive. And notice, right before we get to him, I want to cover over his face. I want to placate him so he will show me a kindly face when I go to face him. Now he's wrestled with this mysterious being. His name has been changed. His hip has been wrenched. Now he's injured even in all of his striving. Right? One who strives with God, one who wrestles with God. And he came out alive. I've seen God face to face, and I came out alive. And this is picking up on a long biblical tradition of no one can see the face of God and live but Israel, but Jacob in this case. And the sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping on his hip. Seems to me this is a real turning point. He's now in his distress. He's now face to face with his brother, who's come with the sword. He fears for his life. He's now separating his camp. And it's at this moment that he has this wrestling match where he's still tenacious, still demands a blessing. And now it's his name change. are wondering now, is there going to be a change in disposition from Jacob to Israel? Chapter 33. And Jacob raised his eyes and saw, and look, Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. Here again, we're reminded this militaristic number. And he divided the children between Leah and Rachel and between the two slave girls. And he placed the slave girls of their children first, and Leah and her children after them, and Rachel and Joseph last. I like to say this is the beginning of the Joseph story. He's creating a clear hierarchy here. And he passed before them and bowed to the ground 7 times until he drew near his brother. Here it comes, the moment we've been waiting for. Is this the time to break the yoke from his neck? Is this the time to serve him with the sword? And it's just beautiful how immediate it is. Verse 4, and Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell upon his neck and kissed him. Instead of breaking that yoke from his neck, you see what Esau does. Embraced him, fell upon him, and kissed him, and fell upon his neck. And they wept. And this is a beautiful moment, the weeping of these tears of reconciliation. All those years of enmity, of hatred. It's kind of a waste of time, is it not? The weeping of the tears, the cleansing of the soul, brothers finally united to one another. And he raised his eyes and saw the women and the children. And he said, who are these with you? And he said, the children with whom God has favored, your servant. Notice he keeps calling himself your servant. He's still bowing down to Esau. And the slave girls drew near, they and their children, and they bowed down, and Leah too, and her children drew near, and they bowed down. And then Joseph and Rachel drew near and bowed down. And he said, what do you mean by all this camp I have met? And he said, to find favor in the eyes of my Lord. And Esau said, I have much, my brother. Keep what you have. Look at this. Oh, what Jacob's trying to do here is he's saying, look, I robbed you of your inheritance. I took your blessing. I've got all this stuff because of what I've done to you. Please have this, my Lord. And maybe there's still fear here. Maybe he knows. Maybe this isn't the end of it. We've reconciled, but what's really there? But now look what Esau does. He rejects it. I have much. I too have been blessed. And Jacob said, oh, no, pray, if I have found favor in your eyes, take this tribute from my hand, for have I not seen your face as one might see God's face, and you received me in kindness. And this is beautiful. Have I not seen your face as I've seen God's face? And Jacob precisely knows what God's face is. He knows what that wrestling is. And what is God's face? Remember in the first lecture, I asked about what's the relationship between God to the human and human to human, and is there that intersection? Does the face of God show up in the human to human relationship? We know God seems to part when humans are at war with one another, when there is rivalry, when there's a rupture in the human to human relationship, God seems to part, wants no part of it. But here in this reconciliation, the doing away with this enmity, this repentance on the part of Jacob coming to his brother with all of these things is an offering to make up for, what does he say? It's like seeing God's face. This beautiful ethical moment where the face of God shows through the face of the human. Pray, take my blessing, my berakah, a gift that has been brought you, for God has favored me and I have everything. And he pressed him and he took it. I just want to think about this for a moment. And he pressed him and he took it. There are some commentators who see this as Jacob in kind of a negative scheming light, that he's trying to buy off his brother, that if I give you all of this stuff, surely you'll go away and I can have my peace. Please take it. If I don't give it to you, something still rests over my head. Okay. And just for a moment, I can assume that that's true. But then what does that mean, what Esau has done here? You know, it's one thing to offer a gift, but it's another thing to accept a gift. Oftentimes to accept that gift is much more difficult than to give it, especially when it's in reconciliation. Oftentimes it's much harder to accept forgiveness from another human than it is to offer that forgiveness, because then we can't lord it over them any longer. That Esau, even if Jacob is being deceptive, even if Jacob is trying to buy him off, I don't think that's the case. I think Jacob honestly wants to offer this to his brother, and his brother does him a gift by receiving his gift. He allows for the reconciliation, even if momentarily, that we see these two brothers back together one more time. Verse 14, "My Lord knows the children are tender. He asks Esau to go ahead of me. My Lord knows that the children are tender and the nursing sheep and the cattle are my burden. And if they are whipped onward a single day, all the flocks will die." Notice tenacious Jacob wants to hold off on them. "Pray, let my Lord pass on before his servant. And I, let me drive along at my own easy pace." Imagine Jacob saying, "at my own easy pace." Jacob knows no easy pace. And I love this. "At the heels of the livestock before me and at the heels of my children till I come to my Lord and Sire." The heels, it means at the gate, at the feet. But I love Alter's translation here, at the heels, because in some way, what do we see Jacob doing now? He's there at the heels of his children, now relaxing at an easy pace. We see him at the grasping at the heels, not to strive against, not in rivalry, but to end the story as he wants to return home at the heels one more time. In this story, we see this beautiful reconciliation of two brothers. And even if it's momentary, we know Edom and Israel will go on to have their problems. But here, it's just a beautiful rupture in sibling rivalry in a book that is filled with sibling rivalry. Beginning with Cain and Abel, we see hints of it in Ishmael and Isaac. The full-blown rivalry here between Jacob and Esau, Rachel and Leah. And then, of course, what we are going to see, if I said this is the beginning of the rivalry in the Joseph story, we are going to see yet again full-blown sibling rivalry in this way, all brothers against one. Instead of one brother against another, all brothers pitted against one brother due to a father's favoritism. And so, in our next lecture, we will cover the Joseph story. And we are going to revisit all of these same temptations to rivalry and revenge. And we will revisit one more time the beauty of reconciliation, of seeing one's brother there in front of one's face, and then also to see the face of God.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hillsdale Online Courses podcast. If you want to continue learning about the book of Genesis or other topics, please visit hillsdale.edu/course. There you can find over 40 free online courses, including American Citizenship and Its Decline with Victor Davis Hanson, C.S. Lewis on Christianity, Ancient Christianity, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Republic, and many more. The courses include additional readings, study guides, fully produced videos, and you can chat with your fellow students on a dedicated forum. Upon completing a course, you will also get a certificate. All our courses are free because we believe that a virtuous citizen is the best defense for liberty. So pursue the education necessary for freedom and happiness at hillsdale.edu/course today. That's hillsdale.edu/course. Thanks for listening.